This is Radio Free Asgard.
You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 108, Hyndla's Poem. The giantess Hyndla was asleep. She was growling in her gloomy cave, and it wasn't a pleasant sound. Freya and her boar stood in the cave's mouth listening. Then Freya called out,
"Hyndla, my friend! Hyndla, my sister! Wake up! Come out of your hole in the hill!"
The growling gave way to a sound like a bitch howling at the moon. The giantess was yawning.
"It's dark in there, and it's getting dark out here," Freya called. "And we must go to Valhalla together. We must win Odin's favor. He's always open-handed with his followers. He gave a helmet and a coat of mail to Hermod, and he gave a sword to Sigmund."
Now there was only silence within. Hyndla was listening.
"To some he gives gold, to others glory in battle," said Freya. "To many he gives wisdom, and to many word skill. Fair winds to the sailor, craft to the poet, and a stout heart to many a hero."
Freya paused.
"I'll pay court to Thor as well," she called out, "and I'll ask him always to look kindly on you and support you, although he has little love for giant women."
A large, unwholesome face loomed out of the gloom, and Hyndla slouched out of the cave. She was dressed in something like sacking.
"Bring one of your wolves from its lair," said Freya, "and let him and my boar run in harness. My boar cannot carry us both or hurry on the way to Asgard. He's a marvel, and I don't want to ride him into the ground."
Hyndla looked at the goddess with beady eyes.
"Nonsense," she said. "Pretense and promises. You can't even look me straight in the eye." "Well, I'll tell you straight, that's no boar. That's your lover, young Otter, the son of Einstein. You're riding your lover on the road to Valhalla."
"And you," said Freya, "are full of wild ideas. My lover beneath me on the road to Valhalla. This is my battle boar, Hildisvini. His golden bristles show him the way in the dark. He was made by Master Smiths, the dwarves Dain and Nabi."
Hyndla said nothing. She just sniffed and started to back away into the cave. Freya would not give up and would not go away. She wrangled, she wheedled and cajoled. She threatened. She made promises, and in the end, she won the giant's half-hearted agreement that they should journey to Asgard together.
"Little choice," said the giantess, "if I want any peace."
As Freya had suggested, the giantess rode a wolf, and the goddess mounted her boar. The two animals ran in harness, and at last the travelers reached the gates of Valhalla. They reined in beside Valgrind, the outer gate, and the deer, Hadron, who was grazing there, water streaming from his horns, bounded away to safety. Freya and Hyndla dismounted, and walked down to the banks of the torrent Thund.
"What is talk of the ancestry of two heroes?" Freya said. "Otter the Young and Angantyr, two men fathered by gods."
Hyndla smiled the half-smile of one who knows the truth always comes out.
"Otter raised an altar to me," cried the goddess. "He built up the stones, and now they have turned to glass. He reddened the altar again and again with the blood of oxen. Otter always put his faith in goddesses."
Freya took a step towards the giantess.
"Now tell me the names of the ancients and their kindred. Which men are Skjoldungs? Which are the Skilfings, Othlings, and Ylflings? Who are the firstborn and who are the highborn, the most noble men in Midgard?"
Hyndla looked at Freya. Then she looked at the boar and took a deep breath.
"You, Otter," she said, "are the son of Einstein, and he was the son of Alf the Old. Alf sprang of Ulf, Ulf of Safari, and Safari's father was Svan the Red."
The boar had pricked up his ears and was listening carefully.
Your mother, said the giantess, adorned with gleaming gold bracelets, was the priestess Ladis. Her father was Frodi, and her mother Fjord. Her lineage was peerless. Fjord's mother was Hildegun, who was the daughter of Svava and Sakonum. They're all your kinsmen, Otter, you fool. It's a lot to remember. Do you want to hear yet more?
The boar was listening, and so was Freya.
Hildegund's husband was Ketil, the giantess resumed. So he was your mother's grandfather on her mother's side. Frodi came before Kari, and Holf sprang of Hild. Nanna, the daughter of Nokvi, came next, and her son married your father's sister. That lineage is long, and even longer, and they're all your kinsmen, Ottar, you fool. Isulf and Osulf, the sons of Olmad, whose wife was Skirhold, the daughter of Skekil. They should be counted among the noblest of heroes, and they're all your kinsmen, Ottar, you fool. Then, said the giantess, there are the 12 berserks, Hervard and Hjorvard, Hrani and Angantyr, Pui and Brami, Bari and Reifnir, Tind and Tyrfing, and the two Haddings. These were the sons of Arngrim and Eifura, born long ago in the island of Bulmzo. Howling and foaming in frenzy, they left a trail of terror and leaped like wildfire over land and water. And they're all your kinsmen, Ottar, you fool.
The giantess narrowed her eyes and raised a horny finger.
Long, long ago, all the sons of Jormunrek were given to the gods in sacrifice. Now Jormunrek was one of Sigurd's kinsmen. Mark my words carefully. Sigurd, who can stand against all, slayer of the dragon Fafnir. The hero Sigurd was Volsung's grandson, and his father was Hjordis of the Hraudungs. Her father was Elimi of the Othlings. And they're all your kinsmen, Ottar, you fool. The sons of Gjuki and Grimhild were Gunnar and Hogni, and his daughter was their sister Gudrun, Sigurd's wife. The third son, Gothorm, was not fathered by Gjuki. And they're all your kinsmen, Ottar, you fool. Hvedna's father was Hjorvard, and Haki was the best of his sons. Harald Wartooth was the son of Aud and her husband Hrorek, the Ring-Giver. And the Profound was Ivar's daughter. But Rathbard was the father of her son Randvir. And they're all your kinsmen, Ottar, you fool.
Freya looked at the giantess in triumph.
Ottar and Angantyr have made a wager, she said. They have staked their whole inheritance on the matter of their lineage. Now give my boar the memory beer, so that when Ottar and Angantyr meet 3 days hence, he'll remember your fine recital, every word of it. We must protect Einstein's well-earned wealth, his family heirlooms, so that the young hero can enjoy them.
The giantess opened her rotting, cavernous mouth and yawned.
Go away, she said. I want to sleep again. I'm not doing you any more favors.
She gave Freya a withering look.
My noble goddess, she said, you leap around at night like Hadrian cavorting with a herd of goats.
Freya slowly raised her arms.
I will girdle you with flame so you cannot leave this place without catching fire.
Hyndla laughed in contempt.
You've gone running to Aud, she said, who always loved you, and many mother has wormed his way under your apron. My noble goddess, you leap around at night like Hedron cavorting with a herd of goats.
There was fire in Asgard, dancing in the air. A hand of flame, a quivering halo surrounded the giantess. Her limbs tightened. She pressed her arms against her side.
Flames around me, cried the giantess. The earth is on fire, and I must pay the full price or forfeit my life.
Hyndla flinched as the girdle began to tighten.
Utter's draught of memory beer, she called. Take it! It's full of venom. It will bring him to an evil end.
Stuff, said Freya. Nonsense. It is you who are full of bitterness and rancor. Your threats will do no harm, though.
The goddess was smiling in dose. She trailed her fingers down the boar's back.
Otter will drink nothing but the best if I get my way with the gods. Otter will prosper.
So, in the Norse lore, there's a number of these stories that aren't particularly exciting as far as an action-packed sort of standpoint. They're not the tales of heroes and kings and gods that we've become accustomed to in some of the storytelling that we've done on this show. But nonetheless, they're an essential part of the Norse mythology or the Norse lore. And this is one of those odd ducks that really kind of fits in. It's a pseudo-history, a genealogy of important people who we really don't have a very clear idea of who they are anymore. A lot of the names are names that you really only hear in the context of this story. There's a few, of course, that we do know. When you talk about the Volsungs, you talk about Sigurd, who we know better as Siegfried, mostly from the operas of Richard Wagner from the 19th century, you know, the Twilight of the Gods and the Valkyrie and all that. This would have had a lot more resonance in 8th century Iceland, for example, where the listeners would have had a context and they would have known who all these people were. There were a lot of stories. Unfortunately, these stories are lost now. And so what we have left is this. I find it interesting for that reason alone. Now, of course, this sort of genealogical syncretism is nothing new, and it exists in a lot of different cultures. It existed, of course, in Roman culture, and of course, Christianity gets it from the Roman culture because Christianity is very, very heavily influenced by the other mythologies of Rome. But you have, in the Old Testament even, you have the books of so-and-so begat so-and-so, and these long passages of names of people who begat each other. And of course, in the New Testament as well, they're tracing the lineage of Joseph back to King David. So, and this is, of course, where I can trace my descent from Odin, is through the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, knowing that my family is descended from certain historical figures who are able to trace their genealogy, though albeit through questionable means, back, of course, to the gods themselves. I find that sort of historical storytelling really interesting, though I recognize that probably a lot of folks out there wouldn't. I don't really make a lot of apology for that because I really do want to cover the entire Norse mythology. And that includes some stories that are like this. We've talked about the Song of Rig before, and we're going to get that one too eventually, though I think that one's a lot more entertaining than this particular one. We'll have a more action-packed one next time, I promise you. My last observation here before we finish up this discussion is that I really like the meter of this. I like the structure of the story. You have this almost like a song. You have a refrain, and they're all your kinsmen, Otter, you fool. And I can only imagine that the skald, the person who is, you know, around the fire with the local village people who is telling this story, would have a little bit of audience participation. It was a way to engage the crowd. You could have the children shout out, and they're all your kinsmen, Otter, you fool. You know, and make it a little bit fun. At the same time, they'd be learning this important lineage. Important, of course, to their culture, not necessarily important to them personally. I'd like to think that this was a sort of an audience participation sort of exercise. Of course, we'll never know. We don't really have enough examples of this stuff left from the Middle Ages that we could actually tell. You can note also the repetition here, and it's not just me repeating it by accident. This repetition of the giantess accusing Freya of cavorting around like she's cavorting around with goats. And this is actually a deliberate dig. This is actually basically the giantess calling Freya a slut. And the reason for that, of course, is because Freya is a goddess of fertility. There are other myths where Freya's honor is questioned as well. But this was kind of a deliberate jab at Freya, which of course is why Freya threatened to burn her alive. Now, speaking of action-packed, we actually have a Thor issue to cover, so let's go ahead and move along to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, Mighty Thor.
So this week we will cover the Mighty Thor number 7. It has a cover date of January of 1999, retailed for $1.99 or $2.70 in Canada. Cover art is by Johnny Romita Jr., inked by Claus Johnson, shows Thor and Hercules being zapped by the lightning of this big red-haired dude who we recognize as none other than the Greek god Zeus. And of course, there's the cover blurb that says, "The power of Zeus!" So we know exactly who this is. And this is actually, remember a couple months ago when I went to C2E2 and I said I picked up a book there? This is the book, folks. Yep. This is the one. I'm actually reading this out of a paper copy. See, now it's no longer mint. Anyway, this has a gatefold cover, which is interesting. You know, and I guess this is something you don't get if you get the trade. We have a gatefold, and it's explaining who all the characters are. And they have a little previously in the Mighty Thor little blurb here. And so we have some of the characters in this issue. Of course, Thor, Norse god of thunder, master of the storm and lightning, heir to the throne of Asgard, blah, 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 blah. We got Hercules, son of Zeus, gifted with superhuman strength. Odin, the omnipotent ruler of the Asgardian gods, and Thor's father. The dark gods, yes, we've seen them before. The mysterious pantheon of malevolent gods who have decimated Asgard. Their ranks include Pericus, Adva, and Majestan Zelia. Zeus, the all-powerful ruler of the Olympian pantheon and the father of Hercules. And of course, we have numerous other Olympian deities here who we'll be seeing in just a few pages. So we open up to where we left off. Basically, we have the dark gods, and you remember they've summoned Majestan Zelia to the ruins of Asgard. And we have her sitting on a... It's a throne, but I get the sense that she really can't do a lot of moving around in this place. I don't know. It's almost like a wheelchair. And you have this kind of broken ruins of Asgard, and Zelia is gloating here.
Asgard stands transformed. The time has come for him to see it, Pericus.
Advar's here, Mother, eager to do your bidding.
The Continuum Gateway is yours to command, Advar. Bring him across now that I may witness his pain at seeing the city that is no longer his to rule. Let the void open, let the barrier lift.
And there's a kind of a glow in the air, and it turns into a portal with a tashash, big glowy globe of light.
Watch, Majestan Zelia, as the prisoner appears. You rejected my love once, you insignificant worm. Let the universe know, now and forevermore, that Odin the Fallen is now my servant.
And they've summoned this big, huge Kirby machine. Looks really heavy, and it almost looks like it has a face. Yeah, it does kind of have a face. But it's this giant, like, iron contraption, and it's got, you know, Odin all trussed up and wearing rags. So, basically, Santa Claus in bondage, yep. And we get, of course, the credits to the story. Dan Jurgens wrote this. John Romita Jr. was the penciler. Claus Johnson was the inker. Gregory Wright was the colorist. Richard Starkings of Comicraft was the letterer. Tom Brevoort was the editor. And Bob Harras was the editor-in-chief. And Odin looks none too pleased to be trussed up here in Asgard. He's like,
Zelia, thou thinkest me defeated, chained in shame for infinity? Thou believest my kingdom is thine? Thou art wrong. Know you, Zelia, that I would rather taste of Hela's lips, her kiss of the abyss, before I would succumb to thee.
And Odin, even when he's trussed up, is a badass. I mean, he looks really, really mean here. Really determined.
Arrogant warthog, You will yet beg forgiveness of me, Odin. Your subjects fall one by one to Pericus's blade. You will beg.
Though you would torture each and every Asgardian to the point of death itself, none shall beg thy mercy. I spit at thee, Zilia Patoot, he spits at her, as every warrior of the realm shall do. And she doesn't like that, and she gives him a smack. And he's like, art thou mad? None may live that strikes the omnipotent. And she strikes him again, and she's like,
I dare, again and again and again, if necessary. And she's like, quack.
The word of Odin is law. The word of Odin is truth. When comes the day of our freedom, thou shalt suffer such a wrath as thee hath never known.
The thing that's bad grammar there, but anyway.
Who will rescue you, Odin? Those you rule are in chains.
All but the Odin son, and he is not to be found even on Midgard. Surely he is dead.
This I know to be true,
says Odin. Interesting to say.
We are well aware of your alliance with the Olympians. Thanks to the talents of Dachel the Deceptor, we need never worry about them.
And Odin is just glaring at her like looks could kill. She would be all kinds of fried. And we shift scenes now to Olympus, where, remember, Thor and Hercules have transported themselves to find Olympus in ruins. And they're kind of walking around in the ruins here, and Thor says, by the beard of Odin, 'tis a shambles indeed, Hercules, as though Olympus did suffer the same destruction as eternal Asgard itself. Though almighty Zeus hath banished me from the kingdom, he has stripped me of my birthright of immortality. Still do I call this home, says Hercules. And while they're wandering around, they find a grave, and it has the name Dionysus on it. I like the fact that the Greek gods, they bury each other. They give a little wooden cross. Oh, it's very sweet. Anyway,
Dionysus, friend and counselor to Zeus himself, dead? Turn away, Avenger. 'Tis the heart of Hercules breaks. 'Twould be most unseemly for thee to see me weep. I know well of thy pain, my friend.
And they hear a voice from off-panel saying, evil one! And then we get a bedwetting ad here. Apparently Mark McGuire of the Cardinals is a bedwetter. And you can call 1-888-WAKE-DRY to get help with your bedwetting problem. Anyway, so we have a one of the Greek gods and a really Kirby-esque chariot being drawn by two white horses is just barreling his way at Thor and Hercules.
Betraying dog, thou art unfit to walk the ground of Olympus.
By my troth, says Thor. Hermes, what manner of insanity has taken a hold of thee? He didst but call me a betrayer. Such manner wouldst beg for battle, says Thor.
'Tis not mere battle I would have with thee, says Hermes. I would claim thy head.
So be it, says Thor.
And Hermes turns his chariot around and is charging at Thor. Thor is whirling his hammer about. And as Hermes tries to rush Thor, Thor leaps aside, grabs Hermes out of the chariot by the nape of his neck. And very dynamic scene there. I mean, I have always said Johnny Romita Jr., very good at action. And grabs him out of the chariot, says, though I didn't come in peace and friendship as I has ever done, the gauntlet hath been hurled. And he is kind of grabbed Hermes by the scruff of his neck.
When cries the siren of battle, Thor shall be the first to assume the charge. And Thor is speaking in logos.
Take a drink.
That sound, as though spear or arrow doth approach.
And he swipes his hammer around and destroys these spears that are being launched towards him.
Launched by a coward born, to be sure, for no true warrior of honor wouldst attack from behind. For any Asgardian to speak of honor after what you did, or accuse me of treachery, is blasphemous!
And it's Ares, of course, the god of war, and he's thrusting at Thor with a spear and skewers Thor's cape, and Thor's like, Ares!
Thou wouldst make a mockery of honor, and thou! Cease thy vitriolic prattling, says Thor.
And Thor's grabbed from behind by this guy wearing a gold helmet, and yeah, he's kind of choking him with his arm. He's like,
wretched villain, thou shalt not dispose of Atlas so easily.
And Hercules is kind of aghast here. He says,
'Tis seemingly impossible. Those whom I call brothers attack he who is my comrade. To whose cause do I rally?"
And Ares is like, "Let the spears of Ares drink of thy blood, invader." And he's chucking javelins at Thor. And Hercules grabs Atlas from Thor's back and he's like, "Hold, Atlas. Such comedy divine shall proceed no further." And Atlas is like, "Traitor!" And we see that Ares has chucked more spears at Thor, and Thor smashes them with Mjolnir. He's like, "The skirmish must end. Stand ye back, one and all. Stand thee back, or face the mallet of Thor." And Mjolnir destroys all the spears, and it is returning to Thor's hand. And we see that it's racing towards Thor's hand, and he's saying, "Mighty Mjolnir hath done its work. Reveal your reasons for such an attack, Atlas. For ne'er hath the son of Odin given you cause to behave so." And Atlas says, "What Odin and all his progeny rot, I say." And we see that Mjolnir is out of control again. Remember, that's happened a couple of times since the beginning of the series. And rather than coming right back to Thor's hand, it's actually kind of racing towards Thor's head. And Thor dodges, and it smashes Atlas right in the face with a crump. Knocks his helmet off. And Thor's like, "Insolent fool, to speak in such a manner to... Nay, Mjolnir!" And he ducks. He's like, "Zounds, had I not moved swiftly aside, 'twould have been me who was bludgeoned thusly." Then Mjolnir does return to his hand. Thor says, "Again does my own hammer act as if it had thought an intention of its own." "Stay thy hand, my friend," says Hercules. "'Tis time for talk, that we might find what madness transpires here. Though I cannot help but feel that Olympus' destruction shall be the cause." And we see an explosion of flume in the wreckage. And Thor's saying, "Thor would know more indeed, but it seems there still are others who dare attack the god of thunder." "Mayhap," says Hercules, "for such is the way and manner of Pluto." And we have Pluto. Yeah, we've seen Pluto before in this show, back in the Lee Kirby era. And a Pluto pops up in a puff of, like, brimstone and fire. And for once, not Kirby Crackle, which is interesting. And Pluto's like, "Son of Zeus, thou art Olympia no more." And a Pluto removes his helmet. And Pluto was drawn very much in the style of John Buscema here. And it suits him. I mean, it suits Pluto.
"Were the sentence of Zeus not enough? Thou hast proven it so by aligning yourself with the Asgardian pig."
"Thou art master of the netherworld," says Hercules. "Only thou wouldst have reason and power now to weigh waste to proud Olympus."
"Though I might wish it so, 'tis not fact."
And you hear a voice from behind Hercules.
"The evil one speakest true, my errant son."
And Hercules whirls around.
That voice, imbued with limitless power, it can only belong to...
And you have another ad here for a video game. And you get a full-page splash here of none other than Zeus.
"Speak, father. What fate most dark and dire hath befallen proud Olympus? Of what concern be that to the one who turned his back on his honorable birthright?"
says Zeus. And Zeus is standing up on this pedestal. He's all glowy and Kirby crackly, and he's got him his, like, battle armor, all green and gold, and he's carrying his big old spear, and looks really impressive here. Really nice job here done by Johnny Romita. Thor speaks up.
"Had Hercules and I but known of Olympus's plight, 'tis most certain we would have fought on her behalf." "Foul besmircher of the truth," said Zeus, and Zeus is pissed.
So pissed, in fact, that his hair changes color on this page and remains brown instead of red for the rest of the issue. Let's hear it for culling errors, folks.
"Every Olympian of courageous heart would raise sword, mace, and spear to cut thee down. For know well do they that thou wouldst do the same to them."
"Thy wild accusations move the god of thunder to lash out at thee, Zeus. Explain thyself, or prepare for battle."
And Hercules like,
"Restrain thy tongue. None may speak thus to the Almighty."
"'Tis to be expected from one sired by a pig warmonger."
And Zeus's eyes start to glow. And we cut back to Asgard, where, of course, Odin is being trussed up here by the evil dark gods.
"Ye speak of the Olympians as though they're but an afterthought. Why?"
"Their deceptor is capable of anything, fallen one. Even of making that buffoon Zeus think the
possible. And we shift back to Olympus, and we're getting a little bit of the backstory here, getting a little bit of exposition here from Zeus himself. And Thor is pretty pissed as Zeus is saying all these bad things about him.
Have a care, Zeus. None may refer to omnipotent Odin with such coarse language. To do so is to court war.
And Hercules is trying to stop him now. He's like, Thor!
Alas, war with the brothers of Asgard is not an idle threat. For it was they who laid ruin to beautiful Olympus. From the mists they did charge, bereft of reason, without warning, to slay all in their path. And you see the scene of various Asgardians, and we see the Warriors Three, and we see Sif. There's a brave Balder, dashing Fandral, grim Hogan, even voluminous Volstagg, and the beautiful Sif. All once blessed with the favors and feasts of Olympus, now sought to spill our blood.
And it shows, they're all in battle, and you have, Odin and Loki are standing up on this sort of hilltop watching this all happen while everyone's bashing each other.
For days did the battle rage. Throughout it all, I thought it inconceivable that Asgard's lord could order such mayhem. Yet on the last day of battle, I did look beyond the dead, the smoke and the haze to behold, the bloodthirsty general whose lead they didst follow. 'Twas Odin, to be sure, with Loki at his side, and not for naught were they satisfied. Victory was theirs, Odin's son. As mysteriously as they didst come, so didst they leave. Had thee been amongst them that day, thy corpse wouldst now bear the smoldering burns of Zeus.
Such an atrocity! 'Tis not possible!
The liege of Asgard wouldst ne'er lead his warriors against Olympus.
And Hercules is getting pissed here.
You persist in challenging the word of Zeus?
Aye, friend Hercules. Thou art aware of one unyielding fact. Odin and all his subjects of Asgard have disappeared. 'Tis nigh unto impossible for such a war to have transpired as described.
And Ares jumps up and he's all pissed off. It's like,
the son seeks to excuse the father. Slay him!
We get a little flashback here to Odin here in Asgard.
Thou didst call Zeus to think we made war upon him? Never! No illusion could fool one such as he, says Odin.
Of course it could, chained one, says the Magiston. How simple it was for us to attack Olympus, masked by the deceptive mists of Dachel. So far as Zeus and his minions were concerned, it was you who attacked Odin.
Nay, 'twas Zeus who fooled thee by pretending to believe thy falsehoods.
None ever penetrates the altered images of Dachel. Observe. Is it Pericus, or do you gaze into a mirror?
And Dachel has kind of transformed Pericus into the image of Odin that we saw in the previous page.
Why? Why wouldst thou desire war and carnage amongst the gods?
War is not our interest. Your complete and total defeat, however, is. It is not enough for you to die. Your legend must be extinguished as well.
Yes,
says Pericus.
You spurned Zelia's love. You kept me prisoner throughout the ages. And for that, you will suffer.
And he strikes at Odin with a spack. And we shift back to Olympus where, Thor and Hercules are facing off against Zeus still.
Apologize to my father, Thor. Anon.
And Thor is not having this. He's standing up against Zeus here.
Nay, Hercules, the truth must needs be spoken. Zeus errs. This doth Thor know. And this shall Thor forever swear to.
Thou wouldst force a fight to death with all Olympus,
says Hercules. Thou art comrade and avenger, else already would I have rendered thee unconscious.
Declare thine allegiance once and for all, Hercules. Art thou avenger of Earth, friend to the Asgardian, or art thou defender and son of Olympus?
And Hercules advances on Thor. You get a kind of almost a full-page spread here of Hercules getting ready to punch Thor.
Thou didst see fit to strip me of my immortality, father, says Hercules. Still, Olympus now and forever is mine to defend.
Again we are pitted against each other, says Thor. Again blows might be traded in unnecessary anger. But though I be warrior born, pledged to the glory of combat, I lower my hammer to thee, and then he stands down. I swear to thee here and now that Olympus was not plundered by Asgard. Thor doth give his sacred word on the matter, and no being, be they man or immortal, may ask for more. And Thor's decided, obviously, not to fight against Hercules if Hercules attacks him. And Hercules is taken aback by this. He's like, eh? Which proves that even a dunce like Hercules can be surprised. And Hercules grabs Thor by the front of his shirt. He pulls back his fist to punch. He's like, 'Tis the word of thee and thee alone against that of the magnificent Zeus and all Olympus. Thou hast no proof of thy claims, and yet thou art an avenger. Thou dost carry enchanted Mjolnir, an honor bestowed upon one who's purest of heart and a stranger to the ways of deception.' And Hercules lowers his fist. Says, 'For those reasons and the years invested in friendship, I too lower my fist. In the mind of Hercules, thy claims be true.' And Zeus now is really pissed off by this. He's like, 'As always, thou doth disappoint me, my errant son. For that reason and a thousand more do I rue the day I first journeyed to earth. Go ye both, do I say. Get thee gone.' And he waves his magic scepter thingy, and there's a big red cracked, and a big red explosion, and appears that both Hercules and Thor are transported back to earth with a shaboom. And where do they appear? Of course, in the middle of the street. Take a drink. but there are cars there, so you don't get to take a second drink. Anyway, there's a shaboom, and Hercules and Thor are back in New York City. And Hercules is actually pretty happy to be back. He's like, "Ah, fair Earth, wouldst thou care to partake of a tankard or ten of ale, friend Thor?" Now, is it just me, or has Hercules gotten over the destruction of Olympus awfully quickly? This would seem to me almost to be an inappropriate reaction.
"Nay, Hercules. Zounds, there is much to celebrate. Ne'er before hath any challenged the word of Zeus as did you. Mayhaps thou art capable of teaching me such fortitude." And he claps Thor on the shoulder, friendly-like. "The god of thunder may not partake in such frivolity. Thou art blessed with the knowledge that thy father lives, while I know no such comfort. The quest of Thor continues." "As ever, it seems Hercules is yon radio receiver."
And you have a clip of the Chucky Diamond show. It's like, "Chucky Diamond, at you live, and today we're talking Thunderbolts. Turns out they're not heroes at all. They're masters of evil. Nuke the lot of them, I say." And Hercules is, he's like, has his mean face on, and the cop is listening to this. Is like, "You looking for something?
Masters of evil? Such dastardly deceivers as they who didst once lay me low must be made to feel the righteous wrath of Hercules."
And apparently this leads into a crossover of Hercules into the Thunderbolts next month. And of course we're not going to be covering that, I don't think. Well, maybe we'll. Yeah, we'll never see. Anyway, maybe we'll. Maybe we'll. But not next week. And that is Thor number 7, folks. So interesting issue. A lot goes on in the issue. Once again, I hate to say it, the plots that we've been getting are just kind of hackneyed, aren't they? I hate to say that, but this is such a typical 1970s Marvel plot. It's all about, let's you and him fight. We're going to have a misunderstanding. Everyone's going to fight. You're going to talk, and then people will kind of get it and stop fighting. Here, though, I mean, we have a different wrinkle on it here. I mean, we have most of Asgard. We do have kind of a wrinkle on it here where most of Olympus still wants to kill Thor. They still think that Thor is guilty, but he managed to convince Hercules. Now, granted, Hercules isn't the sharpest tack in the box, you know what I'm saying. But anyway, artwork generally really good. I like the way that Romita Jr. draws motion. And, you know, of course, I've been talking about that ever since the beginning of the series. Generally speaking, like his work, it's a bit sketchier this issue than it has been in other issues. But the layouts are still really, really strong. I know I said last time that the art is somewhat better this issue than last, and basically it is. And I think that's just not so much because of any more detail in the art, because I actually think, if anything, there's a little bit less detail. I like the fact that he did a little tribute to John Buscema and the way he drew Pluto in this issue. I like a lot of stuff in this issue. You do have some very sort of Jack Kirby-ish moments in here. But at the same time, without being too Kirby-esque and sort of derivative of Kirby, you do, of course, have the Kirby crackle and the giant metal machine thing that holds Odin, which is very Kirby-esque. But by and large, I think it's a pretty good issue overall. Talking a little bit about the ads, I mentioned that there's a lot of video game ads in here, and there really are. We have an ad for Bushido Blade 2 for the PlayStation, and hey, guess what? If you buy it, you get a collector's CD with a playable demo of Final Fantasy VIII. Pretty cool, huh? And we have a Disney Channel ad, a new original series, the famous Jet Jackson, which I guess is sort of a Disneyfied version of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. That's kind of what it looks like from the ad. We have the Parker Brothers ad for Risk. I'm guessing that this is not a video game version of Risk, but actually the actual board game. Of course, we have the ad for Mark McGuire, the Bedwetter, hit a home run for your kids. We have the Kids Foot Locker ad here, the Marvel role-playing game here, Battle Books, TCA, Championship Racing for the PlayStation. Yeah. Free Marvel Comics from Mile High Comics. Select any five Marvel Comics free when you join the wonderful Marvel Comics Internet Email Club. Yeah. So give us your email address and we'll give you some comics that you don't want. Joe Kubert School is advertising in this issue, as they often did. And a little advertisement here drawn by Kubert himself. And yeah, so very cool there. As I say, I always enjoy looking at the ads and these things. We have an ad for Xenogears by Squaresoft, only on the PlayStation. I'm guessing PlayStation has the Marvel license at this point. We have the letters page here called Mail Yolner, which is kind of dumb. Is this a Columbia House book club? Science fiction book? A science fiction book club ad. I didn't realize that this science fiction book club existed in 1999. I don't know. They probably still exist now, and I just don't know about it. I was a member of the science fiction book club way, way back in the day, back in the very early 80s and late 70s. I have an ad here for the new Spider-Man books. Peter Parker, the Spider-Man number one, and Amazing Spider-Man number one. And we get Overpower, the card game. Yeah, and if you get your hands on a free copy of the ultra-rare Sunburst Variant Edition Avengers number one, I think if you go to the Overpower convention or whatever the hell it is. And there's, interestingly enough, a credit card ad in this. You get the Marvel credit card. It's a MasterCard. Got the credit card with power, and it has a picture of Spider-Man on it. And that is, I think that's kind of insidious, if you ask me. I do not think the comic company should be showing for credit cards. And, of course, last but not least, we have Bugs Kick Grass, which is an ad for Disney Pixar, A Bug's Life Thanksgiving. Pretty cool picture there of a very... Mean grasshopper. And on the back cover, Kids Foot Locker. Some kid, dorky kid, is doing a show and tell about his shoes. All right. And that is store number 7. All right. So we hope you enjoyed the show this week. Thanks very much for listening, as always. And of course, if you want to email the show, please feel free to do so. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And you can also find us on Facebook. Join our Facebook group, and we'd be happy to see you there. All right, so until next week, thanks very much for listening, and we'll talk to you later here on Radio Free Asgard. See you next week.